from one state to another without needing a cover sheet, as you do in photopolymerization, you might have another market ahead of you. The proofing system, chromalin, which was hugely successful, was primarily positive working, which meant that if you, the air that was exposed became hard, and the unexposed areas accepted a colored powder or toner. So with that technology, we were able to make positive working proofs. We never made a very good negative proof with this technology, and so the two of my colleagues over there, a man named Mario Grosse and another one named Walter Abele, developed the following technology. They coated a white surface with a mixture of bimetazole and some other chemistry, and it turned out that the exposed areas became tacky and the unexposed areas remained non-tacky. That meant now the areas that you shined light through could be toned to be colored. So this was a negative image. Now, the idea was then you'd have a negative proofing system, which would complement the positive proofing system that was known as chromalin. And they produced some very nice coatings, but there was one limitation. Once you had toned an area, it was no longer photosensitive. And so if you wanted, say, to have a magenta image, or a, say, a green image, you would want to tone blue and yellow, because you had to use the printing colors, blue, yellow, cyan, yellow, and magenta. And of course, you couldn't tone over an area that had been covered with toner. So this project never became a big hit. And Mario Grosse gave a talk on that in Washington, D.C., at one of the SPSE, SPSE, Society of Photographic Scientists and Engineers meeting. And somebody from RCA came to him and said, "We'd like to work with you." And they said, "What for?" He said, "You have the ideal medium for making color television tubes." And, well, we didn't know how color television tubes are made. As a matter of fact, hardly anybody knows how color television tubes were made in those days. And it turned out that we could coat the glass of a television tube with a mixture of these chemicals, expose them through a mask, and tone the red phosphor, the green phosphor, and the blue phosphor. And we didn't want them to overlap because that would destroy the purity of the color.
Right.
So RCA got very excited about this, and we finally agreed we'd work with them. And since RCA was in Princeton, New Jersey at that time, at Sarnoff Lab, I got that project to work on, and with some help from Mario. And we were doing pretty well, and the people at RCA liked this idea because it involved coating, exposing, toning, exposing, toning, exposing, toning. This would be seven steps. What they had hitherto been doing was they would coat the glass with a mixture of toner embedded in a photopolymerizable matrix. So you toned it, then you had to wash off the unexposed area, dry it, recoat it with another color phosphor, wash it and dry it, and re-expose it, do it again. So I think that actually they figured out there were 23 steps in the way they were making television tubes compared to what we had to offer, which would be a lot fewer and faster. So they were very excited, and they invited us to visit labs and their manufacturing site. They had one up in Scranton neighborhood and one in Lancaster. And I got to work with a nice lady in RCA named Phyllis Brannon. We're still good friends after all this time. And we were off making television tubes that way. Well, this was about 1981, 82, 83. And then RCA got taken over by General Electric, and they changed the orientation of their program. So we decided we'd ship it back to Neu-Isenburg and have our lab there work with Philips. And then Philips in Eindhoven, Holland, developed some specialty application needs for tubes. And they were actually supported the research at DuPont to develop that. And it got up to a point, but then it turned out in the end they had all this automated equipment for making tubes. I mean, when you saw all these tubes being made automatically and to have to reinvent all the equipment, they decided it was too expensive. So that project failed. Mm-hmm. But we could make cathode ray tubes by a totally simple process. And of course, cathode ray tubes now are pretty well history because we're using LCD displays or plasma. And the one thing I mentioned to Ben was that he might be interested in that brief interlude when we were in the tube business. I'd invite him to come here down sometime.
It's an interesting overlap.
Yeah. Sure. So that was called add-on toning. And that was a technology that I said I never could understand exactly how it worked. Because depending on what ratio you used, it became tacky or non-tacky.
Right.
And I haven't found anybody who knows how it works. So much for science.
Right. Well, thank you for that addition.